Today is the busiest air travel day of the year, so it's a pretty good bet that a lot of Americans have spent part of the day standing in line at check-in counters, taking off their shoes to pass through security and awaiting them, cramped seats, overflowing overhead bins, and that strange smell of canned air that marks modern travel. Add in post-September the 11th safety problems, winter weather this weekend, and the uncertain state of the airline's insolvency, that flight through the clouds can begin to look rather grim. So today we've invited someone to remind us about the wonders of aviation. Yes, there are some left, and we want to hear from you. We want your best travel stories, strange perks on foreign planes, moments of wonder and surprise in the air, or questions about how airplanes and the airlines that operate them work. Our number is 800-989-8255. You can send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. And with us now is Patrick Smith, author of the new book, Ask the Pilot, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel. It's a compilation of his columns from Salon, and he's with us from member station WBUR in Boston. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
Your standard economy flight can feel pretty much like flying in a toothpaste tube or a packed bus. Where is the romance of flying these days?
Well, look, the glamour days of flying are gone, and in a way, good riddance. You know, nobody wants us to return to when we had sort of a caste system where only the wealthiest people could fly. I mean, this is the evolution of technology where we are now. What was once extraordinary has become commonplace and ordinary. I'm just asking that people not take it totally for granted. And I wrote the book with two purposes in mind. The first was to inform, and secondly, being something of an air travel romantic, I'm evangelizing a little bit. And ideally, when you put the book down, you should feel two things, informed and more secure, and also enthusiastic and rejuvenated a little bit about the idea of flying, crazy as that sounds in 2004. One example I like to use is today in New York City, you can step aboard a plane and fly nonstop to Singapore, 18 hours away and halfway around the world. And I'm just saying to people, stop and think about that for a minute, because that is a trip that used to take weeks or months in a sailing ship. You have to admit it's pretty cool. And you can do it for pennies per mile. I think it works out to something like 6 cents a mile. I mean, it's just incredible.
It doesn't change the fact that once you get there, as miraculous as it is, you're likely to have a pretty bad headache.
Well, not on Singapore Airlines. They pamper you pretty good.
And as you look at, another thing that a lot of people have questions about is the weather, and obviously that's a big factor today. Snowstorms in the Midwest, a lot of rain in other places, including thunderstorms here in the East. A lot of people get awfully nervous flying in bad weather. Is there really anything to fear?
Not really. The problems are logistical, not safety-related. It's not that flying is less safe in bad weather. Rather, it's that the system becomes bogged down. For one thing, bad weather limits the arrival and departure capacities of an airport, and that backs things up. Airplanes themselves can fly perfectly safely through rain, snow, fog, and so it's fair to think of a weather delay really as a traffic delay. One caveat to that being maybe one aircraft required de-icing. Sometimes a queue forms, and that's more directly related to the weather itself.
I hear that phrase de-icing, and I tremble a little bit.
Oh, it's pretty standard procedure, and the rules that crews have to follow for de-icing are pretty complex, and we haven't had an ice-related accident, if I'm remembering right, since about 1991, and with 15,000-plus departures every day just in this country, I think that kind of speaks for itself.
You mentioned traffic, and obviously we think of airplanes, and I guess most of the fear, if people still have fear of flying, is when they're in the air. There is a lot of traffic on the ground as these things maneuver through. They're not exactly graceful on the ground either.
Well, you mean the airplanes themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because they're made to fly. They're not made to kind of rumble along like a bus.
Are there dangers involved in watching that traffic? I remember a tremendous, I think it was Canary Islands, two jumbo jets ran into each other on the ground.
Tenerife, 1977, that remains the worst air disaster in history. And it's kind of ironic because neither of the two airplanes involved ever left the ground. But most large airports nowadays are equipped with modern ground radar, which allows them to follow airplanes point to point along the taxiways and runways.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some more listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255 if you want to give us a call. TOTN at NPR.org if you want to send us an email. Jim is on the line from Spencer, Iowa.
Oh, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I was sitting on a intercontinental flight with an off-duty flight attendant next to me. And I looked out the window, and for a brief moment, I saw a plane pass by at about 200 feet away. And she got up and went to the back. And I think it was either to throw up or make a report. Which do you suppose it was?
Well, I would be nothing short of amazed if an airplane was actually that close to you. Not to...
It took a split second for it to go by, but in my estimation, it couldn't have been any further than 300 feet.
Well, I hear that sort of estimation quite a bit, and honestly, your perceptions tend to be exaggerated quite a bit. Another one you hear is that, the airplane was banking at 60 or 90 degrees, whereas you rarely go past about 25 degrees. For an airplane to be that close to you, that's incredibly serious, and I just have a doubt that it was actually that close. And certain regimes of flight, certain areas, planes do come relatively close to each other, and that's normal, and they are being watched. If you ever land in San Francisco, for example, they have a set of parallel runways, and you'll be coming in on the approach, and you look off to the side, and there's another airplane right there close enough for you to actually make out the windows, and that's just totally normal procedure.
Well, I think that when a plane passes by in less than a second, it's got to be closer than, say, half a mile. What's the prescribed distance for this sort of thing at the same altitude?
Well, I don't want to get into that because it gets very technical, and there are different distances involved depending where in the regime of flight you are.
But if is there danger of, obviously the thing that everybody thinks about is collision, but is there danger of two planes passing close by and making the air so turbulent that one of them might have a problem?
Well, there is such a thing as wake turbulence, where the wingtips of an airplane spin off a kind of sideways tornado that can be somewhat hazardous, but for the most part, those encounters are just temporary disruptions.
Jim, after that incident, you continue flying?
Well, yes, but, these are the kinds of things. I mean, I continue driving, too.
Well, Jim, I just, in closing, would point out that there hasn't been a mid-air collision, a serious kind involving commercial planes, since, I believe, 1985 in this country. And again, with, 15,000 departures or more every day.
Well, the numbers certainly would reveal that it's a lot safer than, quite a few other things that we do involving machinery and speed. But my analogy is it's not the flying that kills you, it's the taking off or the landing. It's the 1 mile around the airport that's probably going to do you in.
Statistically, I suppose there's some truth to that. But again, you're hair-splitting because you have so few accidents to begin with that, where they happen, when they happen, almost becomes academic.
True.
Jim, thanks very much. Are you flying home for the holiday, Jim?
No, I'm sitting right where I'm at.
Okay, well, have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Our guest is Patrick Smith, the author of Ask the Pilot, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line, and Butch. Butch is calling from Crystal, Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your program.
Sure.
I had a question. I was reading in the Wall Street Journal on Tuesday something. Matter of fact, I have the article here. It didn't go as far in depth as I was hoping it would. They were talking about Airbus making a new competitor to Boeing 787, and both aircraft are supposed to have efficient wing design. Could you explain what goes into making the wings efficient? And I always was interested in how they reshape the wings when they land.
They drop the flaps down, yeah.
Yeah, flaps. And it looks like the wings get a little longer from front to rear also. Mm-hmm. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Butch. Mm-hmm.
They do. The complexity of a wing can be pretty amazing. Think of a wing as a piece of art, really. It's sculpted from root to tip, top and bottom, and it changes shape and it can flex, and there are flaps to come off the back and flaps and slats that come off the front. And when you're talking about efficiency, it's basically about fuel efficiency at high speed and high altitudes. And the engineers at Boeing and Airbus are busy with their computers and wind tunnels, sculpting, to put it one way.
And obviously those configurations have to change when the airplane is at low altitude and low speed.
Correct, and that's what the flaps and slats and spoilers and whatnot do. And there's a segment in the book, that near the beginning of the book, that talks about this and describes in layperson's terms the various accoutrements to the airfoil.
Let's get another caller. Glenn is with us from Muskegon, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just had a comment about what your guest mentioned, that the romance of aviation is gone. And I have to tell you, at age 40, I soloed, and I am here to just promote learning to fly. And as it would have it, I enjoyed this so much, I ended up, now I'm the manager of a flight school in Michigan, and am enjoying the heck out of it. So might be a new adventure for folks that want to experience aviation in a new way.
Well, that's fantastic that people are still getting into it. As for me, it's a little bit interesting because it's more the airlines, I think, and their cultures and networks that have always fascinated me more than the visceral thrill of flying, which isn't to say, you know, I don't want to go out and swing around the patch, so to speak, now and then, but to me it was always about the airlines and the places they flew and the cultures they bridged and that sort of thing, which sounds corny on the face of it, but actually that is what air travel is at heart, and that's what I try to get to in the book. You know, I touch on, well, all the things that air travel itself touches, history, culture, geography, and you know, I've tried to incorporate these things and turn people onto them so that when they go to the airport and they're languishing in line waiting to have their Nikes x-rayed, they take a look around and maybe notice things they wouldn't expect to notice before.
Absolutely. Well, that's certainly it. But I just, the flying is a very romantic thing to me, and I certainly hope that more people become involved in it on a personal level.
Well, I wonder, Patrick, are you a plane spotter?
I was when I was a kid, and what that is for people who don't know is there's a subculture of strange people who hang out at the airport with binoculars and actually log the registration numbers of airliners, and then there are books where, almost like a bird watcher's guide, I guess, you cross off the ones that you've seen. And in junior high school, I was pretty into that, and I don't know if there's much of a plane spotting culture still around today, but I suppose there must be.
I think the Transport Security Administration does not look fondly on it.
Yeah, well, let's not get into security. I know Miami used to be a popular airport for that. There used to be a perimeter fence where you'd always see people with tripods and binoculars. I'm sure they've been cleared out of there by now.
But would it have made your day if you'd seen a caravel or something come in?
Oh, sure. Wow. Somebody mentioned a caravel. That's an old French airliner with some pretty cool lines to it that you just wouldn't see anymore.
One of the things, it's interesting, you write a lot about the aesthetics of airplanes in this. I mean, you're very fond, for example, of the 747.
Oh, I always have been. It's to me the most graceful airplane, which is funny because it's also the biggest, and you think of it as being large and powerful. And meanwhile, Airbus is coming out with their new A380, which is going to be the biggest airplane in the world, and it kind of makes me sad because it's going to get a lot of attention and a lot of press, and yet it has none of the aesthetic grace of the 747. It's just kind of a lumbering, monstrous-looking thing. I don't want to use the word ugly because I've only seen mock-ups of it, but that's what I'm thinking.
Glenn, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Same to you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Patrick Smith writes the Ask the Pilot column on Salon.com. He's the author of the newly published book, Ask the Pilot, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel, and he joined us from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston. Drive carefully if you're out there. We'll be back tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.